We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Good morning, Grinders. Welcome to the DFS pregame show here on Roto Grinders. I'm Jordan Cooper, aka Blender at Blender HD, if you want to follow me on Twitter. And it's Tuesday, September 27th. And right in the midst of NFL season, MLB is about a week left? Something like that. A couple of days left. When is that? What is the end of MLB season? Is it this Sunday? Is that the end? Do they play another couple of days? I have no idea. I don't pay attention. I have no idea. I got to pay attention today, though. Today, I'm going to be on MLB Grinders Live later today. That's at 5 o'clock Eastern, going over the 12-game slate for today. I already got my prize picks in. I already got my prize picks and my underdog stuff in. So I am paying attention somewhat to baseball, but I'll be covering that on Grinders Live. Good morning, people in the chat. Wata, Suki Singh, as usual. Doug Montgomery even joins in with the early birds. Jose Garcia, Rob Gardner. Give me those thummy thumbs. Hit the thumbs up button. Helps us out. It always helps us out here. I typically, if I can, stay up until like 1:30 in the morning just to see what the price picks board is and get those numbers early. Some of the numbers you can't get anymore. I mean, some of these numbers you can't even get anymore. So, some are still out there. So that doesn't necessarily mean that maybe they're not as great as I think, because I just basically compare the bat projections to Prize Picks, and then if there's enough of a discrepancy, I make the pairs and everything. So I know they had Marquez. Marquez was at 4.5 last night. He's up to 5. Snell was at 6.5. He's up to 7. Then we got, what else did I get? Let's see, what else is here? Anything else that moved? I have the greens under 7.5 now. It opened at 6.5. Now it's up to 7.5, but, I have the under now. Mitch Keller over 4.5. Questionable. Greinke over 3, depending on his pitch count. You could take that. Carrasco, I think that the biggest difference right now, I'm surprised it's not up to 6, is Carrasco over 5.5, because in the bat, he's at 6.58. So the 5.5 looks pretty good over on Prize Picks, and Underdog still has it at 5.5 also. So I got some of those in while baseball's still going, and then I'll probably be doing basketball stuff and then football. When the Blitz gets updated later tonight, I'll load up the Blitz and then just go to the NFL stuff and go, okay, what can we get here? What can we get here for NFL? And I just compare the projections. That's it. It's not complicated. It's really not complicated. Just have to get it early. Let me take a look at this Sunday morning. That Sunday morning, I ain't looking at anything unless there's some news that hits, right? Yesterday with Gallup. Gallup practiced all week. I had the Noah Brown under 52.5, and it went all the way down to 37.5 yesterday morning. So I'm like, okay, I'm good. Gallup's going to play. I got the Noah Brown under 52.5. And then it's Gallup's going to be inactive. What the hell is he going to be inactive? Well, apparently he's going to be in it. Apparently he's not ready to play. So obviously the Noah Brown prop should be much higher than 37.5. Maybe not as high as 52. So 37.5, I mean, he was projected for like 46 or something like that. So as almost as a hedge, I just started, you know, whatever I got left, I just Noah Brown over. I paired him with like baseball and MMA and anything that I could find. So Noah Brown went over on the 37.5. He went over on the 52.5. So I lost those, but I kind of broke even. I think I lost. I maybe on all the Noah Brown stuff, I think I lost 10%, right? Because I hedged the other way with the 37.5. I was hoping to get the middle. If he just stayed at like 48 yards or something, then that would have been great. I would have won both. But that's the name of the game over on Prize Picks and Underdog. Just get the best numbers, right? Just guess if you're getting the best numbers, and they're at least like -137s, they at least have a 58% win probability. Like you're good. You're good. You're profiting. Trigger in the chat kicked her captain yesterday, Blender. I know. I said on yesterday's show, I was on the pre-lock show with cards, and I said kicker captain. I don't play kicker captain. Kicker captains rarely win, right? They win. I think this is the third time I've ever seen it win in an island game. They win like 1% of the time. If you looked at all the DraftKings Showdown contests on island games, at least, I mean, the data that I have, it rarely ever wins. And when it does win, it's duped because of the cheat. Like any time you're using if you're using a cheap captain, which kickers are cheap, you know, typically in the around 4K, and then you jam in like 30%+ owned guys around him and spend most of your salary, like you're duped anyway. You duped any. So if you're going to play a kicker captain, you still have to leave like 4,000 on the table to even reduce your dupes. And then your win probability goes down even more than there. So like doesn't matter to me. For large field GPPs, like I do not play these types of lineups, right? Look, it's spend $50,000, right? Right. Oh, it's a 1.6%. Like people look at it, go 1.6% owned captain. It's like there were 176,000 lineups in the large field contest. What's 1.6 of them? I'm doing the I'm opening up my calculator. That's still, that's 2,816 lineups. 2,800 lineups have Graham Gano at the captain. And this one spends all 50,000. And it has like the highest owned players in it, right? Barkley, Lamb, Jones. Then you have Elliott and Marr, but they're still owned. So it's like, if you're investing $15, and you're gonna and you win $10,000, you win the milli, splitting 123 ways. I mean, if you want to do it technically, mathematically, if you were to do that forever, you'd lose money, right? But for $15, you're not gonna live that long, right? If you're only playing $15, you're playing one lineup a slate and this half, okay, you did that, fine. I get it. If you don't mind duplication when you as much, it's still negative EV. It's just that, you know, if you get lucky, you're not going to give it back, only $15 per lineup. But if you had 150 in, like, this is disaster. This is disaster. You'd have, if you 150 and played these types of lineups every slate, you'd have to win and chop like this like 9 times throughout the season just to break even. Just to break even, you have to win 9 showdowns to break even. Right, because remember, you're putting in like $3,000. You're putting in $2,250 or whatever. It's $15. $2,250. And if you're playing heavily duplicated lineups, you may be losing like 50-60% per slate on average. Like $1,000 per slate on average. And let's say you play like just the island games. Three. So that's three. So on average, maxing out 150, you're losing like $1,000 on average. So that's like $3,000 per week, right? So you 3,000 per week times how many weeks? We have 18 weeks. So we're not including Thanksgiving or anything like that. So like 18 weeks. You're losing like $54,000 doing that on average. And then how many times do you have to, if you have a 10K chop or something like that, you're going to have to do that 5 times, 6 times. Even if that, but a lot of times you're going to put in $2,250 or $3,000 or something and minus 90%, right? So it's like, it's quite, you know, easily. So like, just think of the math behind that. Like, you just, why 150? If you're playing a couple of lineups, it's technically the same thing. It's just that when you win 10,000, it's like when you're only playing $50 a slate and you're losing, if you're playing 50, if you're playing four lineups for $60, you're probably losing $45 on average per slate, right? But over the course, yeah, if you chop once for 10,000, you're fine. Okay. Fine. The low, when you're playing low amounts and you're like, oh, okay, I don't mind chopping the milli 10 ways for $100,000. Oh, okay. I get it for that. Dave Jones says, I won $20,000 in week two in the NFL spy contest on DraftKings. Oh, okay, Dave. Just letting people know. Matt Meir says, near the end of the third quarter, I was tied for first in the main GPP. By the end of the game, not even cashing. Yeah, they're welcome to showdown. Yeah, showdown could be brutal. Redoff not even looking until the game is over. I was the opposite way. Early on, like with all these field goals and everything, I'm like, oh, I don't have the Cowboys defense and field goals. It's like, okay, I'm losing a bunch of money. I'm losing a bunch of money today. And then the second half, everything started working. That's why, like, the lineup yesterday on the pre-lock show, I built my lineups just like Matt Meir's. The new tools made building lineups so much easier. Right. The tools that we're talking about, the ones that come with the Theory of DFS for advanced players, theoryofdfs.com, right? You use that alongside Lineup HQ with the projections and the ownership to trim lineups. Matt probably did pretty much the same thing that I did, right? Now, I had different numbers in because I aggregate some projections. I change some ownerships around. But, you know, I just basically create a whole bunch of lineups. I created like, I don't know, 1,200 lineups in Lineup HQ with different captains and different configurations. And then I brought them all into the duplication checker, an Excel, you know, spreadsheet that'll, you know, kind of predict based on product ownership and salary, you know, what's more duped. Out of the 1,200 lineups that I made, there were like 900 that were still candidates. I got rid of all the over fives, not under fours. And then I went into the portfolio trimmer and I just started trimming. Trimming by captain, trimming by salary. It's like, okay, these projections are too low. Getting rid of anything under this thing, getting too much ownership. And I got down to my 75 lineups that I played. But there was one lineup that I hand-built that I liked amongst most all of them, right? And I decided to play the 222 last night. I played two lineups. Typically, I don't. I only play the 222 in showdown if there's like, this is the lineup that I want to play. Like, if I have a conviction on the type of lineup that I want to play in a 2,500 entry contest. Mostly, I just play the large field. But I wanted to see if I could play a Barkley captain lineup that was less likely to really be duped in the 2,500 contest. Right, so still using the most popular captain and the most projectable in the Sims. Barkley was going to be the winning captain like 33% of the time. So I put it together. So I hand built it, and okay, I want to use one of the $200 tight ends. So many people were on Jake Ferguson last night. Okay, Jake Ferguson was I think 20. Well, my other lineup has Jake Ferguson in it, so I did that as an insurance policy. Where's my other line? What happened to my other line? My other lineup here somewhere. Blender. Okay. Right. Jake Ferguson was 30% owned in the 222. 30% owned. Hendershot was 3-10-1 difference. With Dalton Schultz out. And I said on the show, I said, who says that Jake Ferguson is the one that gets Dalton Schultz's work? Peyton Hendershot is a receiving tight end. Why can't it be Henderson? Why can't it just, okay, well, Jake, you do what you do, and Hendershot, you play the Dalton Schultz role. And that's pretty much what happened. Ferguson's a better blocker, it seems like, and Hendershot isn't. So whenever I saw 87 and 89 on the field, I'm like, give it a Hendershot. And Hendershot did beat him out. Got 7 points for a $200 player. Pretty good. 3 for 43. How much more can I ask for? I'd rather have a touchdown in there as well. So I thought there was such a discrepancy there between people playing Ferguson and Hendershot. And I'm like, I think this lineup maybe duped. I'm spending 49.7. So even with 2,500 entries, I'm like, maybe I'm duped once. And it's a 200,000 the first contest. So it's like, okay, 150,000. Would I take 150,000 for this lineup? Okay, sure, give it to me. Right. So I plugged in Barkley, Lamb. I mean, I could have played Elliott over Pollard, but Pollard had a better projection. This was actually the best projected lineup if you locked in Barkley and you locked in Hendershot in the flex. In at least the projection, the RG slash blitz slash aggregate slash whatever projection. So I'm like, this is what I wanted. Okay, I'm going to play this lineup in the 222. And it ended up being the highest scoring unique lineup. And that's really all I could ask for. Like being unique and having a sweat at the end. Right? If Pollard would have gotten an extra point, and then, I mean, I wasn't asking for much. I mean, the difference in this, it's like, dude, like all Pollard had to do was get the two carries that Zeke got at the last drive or whatever, that Zeke got the drive before that. And then Daniel Jones did not throw a pick and just dump the ball off to Barkley a couple of times to lose the game at the end. That would have been $200,000 uniquely. So like, what else can I ask for? I have a sweat. This is the lineup that I liked the most. I liked it the most. Because I thought that the ownership difference between Hendershot and Ferguson was just way out of whack. It's like in filling out a max type of salary lineup with Hendershot, like maybe I could be even less unique. Yeah, 3.4% ownership, give that to me. I had Hendershot in 41% of my lineups last night, right? And going through in the portfolio trimmer, just like I had Ferguson in 32% of them. I just was playing a lot of these guys, not necessarily even spending all of my money, 47,000, 48,000. Those type of salaries. So I had less of the defenses and the kickers. Going through the YouTube chat. Trigger says, I find out I'm so much good at making money in soccer than football. Well, soccer, you're playing more often. Right? There's a big difference in sample size. You could be great at NFL. Just to how many slates do you get? You don't get as many versus soccer. Dave Jones says, I had Hendershot in my DK lineup and won $800 in a 2-max contest. Well, congratulations. Nicola Lydon, did you have a fairly accurate ownership before the slate to know you had that big of an ownership benefit? Yes, I didn't think I had that big. Like in the large field, it was a little, I think in the large field it was 24-3. Let me take a look here. We take a look, filter. I don't know why I might have to filter by team. What's the all ownership? So not counting captain. So Ferguson. Where's Ferguson? What happened to Ferguson? Let's see. Is this updated? What's going on? Yeah, this is the Monday night. This must not be updated. All. Yeah, because these ownerships don't make any sense, right? Zeke wasn't 7.3% owned, so I have no idea. So I could switch over. I think in the large field it was 24%. Ferguson was 24% owned, and Hendershot was 3% owned. Like here it was 30-3 in the large field. It was 24-3, so an 8x differential between the two. I projected 24-8. Like my ownership projection was Ferguson would be 24% owned and Hendershot would be 8% owned. And I still got tons of Hendershot because of that. At 3%, I mean, that's even better. So a lot of the lineups that I excluded because I thought they would be duped actually weren't duped. And the lineups that I thought that I played that were maybe duped once or twice was unique. So it was the best of both worlds. So, I mean, I had plenty of them anyway. So yeah, my ownership was that way more people were going to play Ferguson, even though projection-wise from the median, like the median projection on Ferguson was, depending on where you looked, somewhere between 4 and 5, right? 4.2, 4.8, like something like that as a median. And Hendershot was like 3.5, right? So like 3.1 or 3.8, something like, so like, dude, at those levels, like the distributions aren't they're not that narrow. Like either they're not seeing that many targets anyway. So like, it really comes down to who catches the touchdown. Like that, most of their range of outcome between Ferguson and Hendershot comes down to touchdown equity, right? Which Ferguson had slightly more of, based on the betting lines at least. But outside of that, there's really no difference between them, other than Ferguson had a slightly better touchdown. I think Ferguson had like 20% touchdown equity, while Hendershot had 13% touchdown equity. That still doesn't account for the fact that one shouldn't be eight times more owned than the other. In a very similar case, that it's quite possible, more often than not, that Hendershot is the one that takes over the Dalton Schultz rule anyway, and Ferguson doesn't change. And Ferguson really still is only a $200 player, and Hendershot could be a $5,000 player. It could work out the other way also. But not for that ownership discrepancy. So that's the reason why I like Peyton Hendershot yesterday. Never heard of him before yesterday. Never heard of him before yesterday. Didn't know he did. I had to look up. I went to University of Indiana or something, and whatever people were telling me about him for that play college DFS. But it's not a call. It's just like there's no reason. There's two guys at 200 that both have pretty much the same role, and one's going to be eight times more owned than the other. Like that just doesn't make, that mathematically doesn't make any sense. So that's when I say, okay, I'm going to put in the 222, right? I'm going to put in 75 lineups. I originally started with 40 lineups. I was going to play 40 lineups in a large field contest yesterday, and that's it. That's it. And I'm like, yeah, this Hendershot Ferguson thing, I want to play more. I want to play more lineups. So I played 75 in the large field, and then I played two 222 lineups. And I even played the same lineup with Ferguson in it, which was duped four ways. Just in case. I didn't want to like, okay, like, oh, because I got this $200 player wrong. Right? Most likely, if this lineup does well anyway, it's the other lineup's going to cash as well. Right? If Hendershot had 20 points, for instance, and Ferguson had zero, at 3% ownership, like the other lineup, Barkley, Lamb, Jones, Pollard, Gano, they all would have done well anyway. I would have cashed that lineup as well. I just didn't want to get, it's going to, like, how much of a stake do I want to put down on this when I could build the same lineup with the same five other players in it anyway? And it's still a Barkley captain lineup. And that lineup was only duped four ways in a 2,500 person contest, which I would have tried to avoid. But the winning lineup was duped four ways. Just like in the large field, the winning lineup was duped 123 ways. Kicker captain, 1.6% owned, duped 123 ways. So no, that's not a lineup that is that I would play. I don't play kicker captain lineup. I play defense captain over kicker captains, and defense captains I play way less of than most people. Going through the YouTube chat and answering your questions. Today, it's like toss-up Tuesday, right? Go over yesterday's showdown slate, right? Maybe it's a shorter show. Who knows? What is there to talk about, right? We're still waiting on injury stuff. Is DeAndre Swift maybe out? Amon-Ra St. Brown is whatever. Sterling Shepard, I don't know what happened to him at the end of the game, but he's probably dead, right? So who knows what happens? Is it Sims? Is it going to be Sims? Is Galladay? Galladay had it. Drop. Galladay didn't even have a good game. He was chirping and stuff last week. I only got like one, two snaps. Comes in and horrible. Horrible. So is it David Sills time? Is it Richie James time? Is Darius Slayton going to come out and whatever? Who knows? Who knows what happens with the Giants? So like, we'll figure that out later in the week. But I'll answer any of your questions, right? Even the stupid ones. I'm giving a benefit of the doubt, right? I made some money last night on Showdown. I'm in a good mood. Right, it's not $200,000, but hey, if you could profit playing that many lineups in Showdown, that's a good day. That's a good day. Typically, it's like minus 30%. Shark Killer G, at any percentage, could have Matt Collins not have played Sunday? You know, if you have a time machine, maybe. Well, you have to do what you have to do, Shark Killer G. You got to get into your time machine, and you gotta. You got to do the old Tanya Harding, right? If you get the reference, you take, you know, whatever crowbar or something, you get someone to hit Matt Collins and before practice or something so he doesn't play. That's what you had to do. That was the key to winning on Sunday, right? To go back in time and make sure Mac Hollins didn't put up 33 points. Dakota Litton, for a main slate, do you use your dedupe tool? No. Maybe just for a stack, like Allen is always popular, but do you look at duplicates of Allen plus David, for example? No. There's too many, on a 12-game, 13-game slate, there's just so many combinations that I don't care about dupes. I may care about combinatorial ownership. Like, I'm less likely to have, like, Allen plus Diggs plus Fournette plus Montgomery plus Irv Smith. Like I don't want to be a 2v2 of the cash lineup in GPP. I'd rather be a 4v4, 5v5. I'd rather have different, you know, matrices of players. So I don't need to use the dupe tool, because the dupe tool will just say that it's probably not duped. I mean, like, other than, like, cash lineups and stuff. So no, so I don't use the duplication predictor. I use the portfolio correlation matrix more to see what other people are doing and what the lineups look like and what players stick together more. And then I kind of group those players out and make sure I have less of those types of combinations. And then I use the portfolio trimmer and trim from there. Typically for a main slate, I could easily make 3,000 lineups, easily. Typically I'm making 3,000 to 5,000 lineups. And if I'm paring it all of that down to 100 or whatever, 85 I played. Then out of those 85, I picked 10 out of those 85 to play in the single entry 3 max, spied, power sweep, that are still 1,000 to 5,000 entries. So it's not like it's that small, but it's not the milli or anything. Matt Mears, was your stupid Saturday on Twitter a one-time thing? Not a one-time, but... You know, the reason I don't do Stupid Saturday anymore, I mean, the real reason is because I play MMA and I like watching it, right? So I typically do soccer in the morning for EPL. So I'm up early doing soccer, and then MMA, and then I watch MMA, and I want to go to sleep, right? I run my NFL stuff, like the portfolio stuff, maybe the night before, and then I wake up Sunday and I do my NFL work. So it's a time. I do all these shows already. Stupid Saturday was a thing maybe before I did the pregame show. So it's like, okay, well, I'm not on as much to talk about things. So I consider doing the Stupid Saturdays on Saturdays that don't have a UFC slate. So maybe next, not this Saturday, but the week after that. Because there's going to be a week off for UFC again next week. So maybe then, right? So that type of stuff. Or maybe before Thanksgiving. Like, typically Wednesday night before Thanksgiving, there's nothing going on. And I'll get on Twitter, Periscope, whatever, and I'll do that. What does it matter? Yeah, Jason Hull asked the same question. I do all these shows on RotoGrinders. You can ask me anything you want. Dude, I do a premium game theory show. Sign up for RotoGrinders Premium. That comes out Friday afternoon. Me and Tuttle talk all about that, the Vomit Stack show, even though that it's really not a thing anymore. But all the stacks and the game theory plays and the leverage, I do a show like that every week. I do it, right? Me and Tuttle, the game theory, the NFL game theory show. But that's only for premium people. It's a premium show. You got to sign up. Click on that link in the description. Get $10 off your first month, right? You also get Lineup HQ. I mean, I use Lineup HQ like every day. So practically the home screen of my browser. So you get that. You get all the projections. You get everything. You get all the content. You get the Gridiron IQ. You get all the NFL stuff, the NBA stuff. I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, why wouldn't you get that? And then you get my show on Fridays also. Smart Killer G says, no, I'm saying, how could people have not played Mac Hollins at that price last week? And I'm going back. Well, who said that Mac Hollins was going to do well? Renfro being out didn't really change Mac Hollins. Mac Hollins didn't run Hunter Renfro's routes. He didn't. Mac Hollins ran the same routes. He just ran. He's running the routes on the opposite side of Davante Adams. The thing is that the coverage tends to go to Davante Adams, and Mac Hollins is constantly getting one-on-one coverage. So they threw to him more. That's really what it comes down to. That's really what it comes down to sometimes. Right? So people see receivers out and whatever. Oh, they're going to fill in and get exactly that role. Like, no. Mac Hollins did not have any different role than he had the week before. other than the fact that Renfro was out, he would 3,300 though. He's still gonna he's still probably gonna generate a 15%+ target share. So why not take it for 3,300? Romeo Doubs was in a very similar situation also. But these are very, very fragile situations. Understand that regardless of the results that happened, you want to take advantage of fragility. Exactly what I did yesterday when it came to the Hendershot versus Ferguson. That situation was absurdly fragile. You have two $200 tight ends, Dalton Schultz is out, and who knows what? We don't know what they're practicing behind the scenes or anything like that. People just assume, oh, Ferguson got 56% of the snaps the week before. He's just going to fill in. He's going to play every snap. Like, how are you sure of this? This is fragile. We don't have data. We do not have data on this at all, or very limited data. And the data we do have could not even tell you the whole story. Oh, well, that was in that situation, but not in this situation. Or that was in that type of game, but not this type of game. And then people just make, like, they get overconfident in very fragile situations, and then you take advantage of it by going the other way of what other people do, right? If it turned out that, like, oh, Peyton Hendershot's just going to fill in, and Hendershot would have been 28% owned, and Ferguson was 3, I would have just had Ferguson in that lineup. So I'm not even trying to, like, make a call. I'm just saying, where is the variance? Where is the fragility? So the Mac Hollins thing, that's extremely fragile. But all of the cheap receivers, like Romeo Doubs, that's fragile. Rashad, any of the Buccaneers receivers, who knows what's happening there, right? Between Gage and Perriman and Scotty Miller. Like, you couldn't be surprised if Scotty Miller went 8 for 140 with 2 touchdowns. Or Prashad Perriman went, 3 for 100 with 2 touchdowns. It could be any of these things. The Packers, maybe Randall Cobb has 10 catches. Who knows? The situation is extremely fragile. So you look for the fragile situations, and especially when the field gets too overconfident in a certain situation, you fade or play the other side. Doesn't mean you can't play it at all. You still can. That's why I played a ton of Romeo Doubs in GPP, but not in my cash lineup. My cash lineup, if I wanted to keep T. Higgins in my lineup, I needed the $500 to get down to Mac Hollins. And I figured between Mac Hollins, Rashad Perriman, and Romeo Doubs, I close your eyes, throw it up in the air, and the results, the outcomes could be whatever, right? Between the three of them, it's going to be about, on average, equal, right? But on that given week, who knows? Mac Hollins has 5 points and Doubs has 33 points. It could have happened that Perriman has 28. Could have been any of those. But since Mac Hollins was the cheapest, I just, okay, well, at least I have Higgins in my lineup. Like, that's for cash games. Mac Hollins I still had in GPP, but I have more Doubs in GPP. I have more Perriman in GPP. Because Mac Hollins ain't really the type of receiver that puts up that type of line. He did. Is it going to happen again? Probably not. Dakota Litton says, reminds me of the book Anti-Fragile by Nassim Taleb. Oddly enough, I've read all of his books. Not all of his books, it's 4 of his books. Yes. Read, whatever. Okay, Fooled by Randomness. Black Swan. Anti-Fragile. Like, Fooled by Randomness is probably the best book for beginners, if you want to call it. So if you don't think probabilistically, Fooled by Randomness, I think, is the easier read. But yes, Nassim Taleb's books, yes, exactly. That's how you have to think, right? Nassim Taleb doesn't write DFS books. He's not writing about fantasy football, right? But as far as thinking probabilistic, how the average human brain just doesn't grasp, like, probabilities. And how to train your brain to think that way. Something either can happen or can never happen. Or it gets fooled by anecdotal. And there's so many biases. Selection biases that it gets fooled by. That's why you have all these sites and the news could run stuff. And the headline makes you think one thing when in fact it's not. Right? Because imagine if I told you this. Right? This is something you'll see on the news. This is why you have to look at the studies that they cite. Over the, if I told you headline-wise, I'm making this up, so I don't know if this is true. There has been a 300% increase in crime in this neighborhood. 300% increase in crime in this neighborhood year over year. Would you, and you were looking to move somewhere, right? You're looking for a house or whatever, and you're like, yeah, you have a nice, it looks like a nice neighborhood. It's like, okay, it has good schools and everything, whatever you're doing. And then you find out, it's like, well, there's been a 300% increase in crime, in murder even, or whatever, in crime. And you'd be like, okay, we can't move here. 300%, that's a lot year over year. That's the headline, 300%, right. Yeah, it's gone up from 1 to 3. Last year, there was one crime. One crime, whatever the crime. Pickpocket or whatever. And maybe it was something really minor. One. This year, this cow, 12 months, 3. And 2 of them were for, like, you know, some 15-year-old, like, peed on the sidewalk or something. Like, that type of crime. But 300% increase. Yeah, 300% increase. If there was 100,000 crimes happening and now it's 300,000, yeah, that's a lot. To add another 200,000 crimes in a neighborhood, yeah, that would be a lot. But 1 to 3, come on, really. If you look in the past, it's like, oh, certain years there were 4. Some years there were 2. Some years there were 0. Some years there were 5. But in the grand scheme of things, dude, if there was only 5 crimes reported an entire year in an entire neighborhood, you would think it's the safest place ever, right? So the 300% increase, but this is exactly what people will do. The one that I hate the most, I mean, I'm a little bit biased because I didn't go to college, is the one that says that the study, which is probably like 40 years old, that people with college degrees will on average earn $1 million or more in their lifetimes versus people that don't have a college degree. And then you think, okay, that makes sense, right? Statistically, you think, okay, that makes sense, but you don't think further into it. You don't see how there's a selection bias in that. The selection bias is that it's not controlled for people that didn't go to college, that could have gone to college. Okay? So on average, you have to expect, on average, a person that gets into college and completes college versus a person that doesn't get into college and or doesn't even complete high school, the intellect level is going to be different, right? So on average, the types of people that go to college, even if they didn't go to college, would probably make over a million in their life, like a million more than other people. So it has not necessarily a bearing that they went to college, just that they're the type of person that could learn a skill well and complete a project and get a degree, get a piece of paper that says, yes, I went to this thing. I did this thing that I committed to and I completed it. Like that's all it says, right? So controlling for that, what does the stat mean? It means nothing. It's a selection bias, right? The common selection bias, you'll always see the chart with the fighter jet. With the wings, right? That's the common. Everyone will always show you that for the World War II. I don't even know if it's a real story from World War II, right? That the planes that would come back, right, would have all the damage on certain areas of the wings. So the people would say, well, wow, the wings are getting damaged at all these places. They reinforced those spots, but that's the wrong way to think. Said what you should be doing when the planes come back with the damage is that you should reinforce the places that aren't damaged. You go, well, why would we want to reinforce the places that aren't damaged? Because those are the planes that didn't return. So if all these planes are returning and in this parts of the wing they took a ton of damage, meaning that most of the planes that aren't here that got shot down probably took that same damage, but they took the damage in other places that made them fall into the ground or whatever, or blow up or something. So you should be reinforcing the spots that aren't damaged. That the plane, all the dots that it comes back, I mean, I could show you that. You've seen it before, right? The wings. But logic, your brain, the human brain goes, oh, yeah, oh, it's damaged. Let's make sure to do that better. It's like, well, they returned even with that damage. So that isn't the problem. The problem is the places that didn't take damage from the planes that returned. Like, that's a selection bias. Rob Gardner even says, my favorite is 50% of accidents happen within 2 miles of your house, which is also where you spend 50% of your driving distribution. Right, exactly. Exactly the same type of thing. Right? Exactly the same. Oh, it's like, oh yeah, you're much more likely to get into a car accident within 2 miles of your house than with 100 miles of your house. So if you're on a trip, if I'm driving from here from Louisville to Chicago, like once I leave the Louisville area, I'm so much safer. Like that isn't true. That isn't true at all. Right? Yeah, most of it happens because most of the time you're within 2 miles of your house. Yes. If you spend 95% of your time within 2 miles of your house, if you're going to get into an accident, it's probably going to be in that time because that's the time you're in a car, right? Right, those types of things. But most people, you see a headline. That's the headlines, and you don't piece the two and two together, right? Things aren't controlled. You're not looking at the exact study, right? People look, and they're deceiving you. The headline is. I mean, it's not even statistics. I mean, I remember my back in the day, because I mean, I was a computer nerd, and I was in, you know, on the internet on BBS's way before the general public. And I used to see like local news or something. It's like, oh, like in 1995 or something or six, like really in the early consumer internet of like, you could get a virus from email. Don't open your email. Don't open your email. There's a virus going around. Don't open your email. National news, don't open the Melissa virus or whatever the hell it was. Don't open your email. And I'm like, this is just fundamentally wrong. You can open your email. Don't download the attachment and run it. I mean, like that, you need to do something else than opening your email. But what it did is just it scared people to open their, I can't touch email. This internet thing, okay, this sucks. This internet thing sucks and I can't open my, the news said not to open my email. It's like, well, Don't click on it. Don't download an attachment and run an exe file from some random email address that you don't know of. Like that's the headline. That should be the headline. Of like, your computer ain't gonna blow up if you just check your email. It ain't. And it ain't gonna happen. But headlines are headlines, and that's technically, they're not telling you anything. It's like, oh yeah, you could get a virus from your email. Yes, you are technically correct. But it's not just simply the process of opening your email. Right. Just not simply that, but other people will think that. So that's what I look at when it comes to a lot of like statistics stuff. Right. Oh, I won $10,000 by 123-way chop. It's like, this is, I could perfectly build this lineup as long term and be profitable. No, you can't. This one instance, sure. Yeah, of course. Don Montgomery says, that's it, I'm moving. Yeah, because as long as you're driving 2 miles, more than 2 miles away from your house, you're safe. Within 2 miles, it's a death trap. Like that's what the stats say. What else in the chat before we get out of here? Don Montgomery says, that show with Tuttle is awesome. And the Squirrel Patrol show is awesome also. Yeah, the solo ship with JM Twin and Squirrel Patrol. You should listen to that. Oh, that's a free show, right? That's on YouTube. That's on the podcast feed, right? You can get all the podcasts on the podcast feed and iTunes, Daily Fantasy Football podcast feed. You can get this show. People do listen to the show every day on the Roto Grinders pregame show podcast feed. You could subscribe to that, or you could watch here on YouTube. Hit that thumbs up button. Give me the thummy thumbs. It's a shorter show today. What else is there to do? There's nothing to do. We went over some showdown stuff. I answered some questions. We talked about planes and statistics lying. Right, we talk about selection bias, so you learn some stuff. Get some Nassim Taleb books, right? Sometimes his writing is sometimes a little bit, he could say things in a little bit simpler ways, but I still think they're good. So pick those up as well. Pick up The Theory of Daily Fantasy Sports for Advanced Players. How to Apply Profitable DFS Strategies with a 10-chapter audio course, 6 hours of audio, and 7 custom tools in Excel for you to use. To build lineups, weed them out, find the highest EV lineups through using blunt methodologies that you can. So that's theoryofdfs.com. Rotogrinders.com/premium, right? You could sign up, click on that link, get $10 off your first month. And yeah, and I'll be back. I'll be back tomorrow. I'm here every day, pretty much. Maybe Saturday. I think Saturday is the only time that I don't do a show on Roto-Grinders. It's of some type. Because even Sunday, I'm doing the Twitter Spaces. So I'm like, I never stop. So if you got a question, I got an answer, and I'll be here doing that Monday through Friday, 11 o'clock Eastern, on the DFS pregame show on rotogrinders.com.